It's Thursday, the weekend is almost here, and it is Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day, everyone. Afternoon, or whatever time it is of the day, or even good evening, whatever time it is day that it whatever the time it is day whatever time of the day that you are listening to this podcast. Welcome back to the Whitebeard and TK podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Whitebeard, and today is Veterans Day, as I said in the opening. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We had a few things planned. We already had recorded a few shows this week and got busy and forgot to post them for a lot of different things. So it may just start out next week with everything lined up for all those days that we're going to be doing. Matter of fact, in one of them, you hear that this particular podcast was going to happen this week. But no worries. You'll understand why all those things happened. Anyway, today is the day where there will be a lot of veterans out there that will be hearing the words, "Thank you for your service." I don't think I've ever really said that. I probably did maybe once. But I tend to think that, you know, a better way would be to thank someone for their service and serving the country and doing a few other things is just by showing that. Showing that you're grateful. Not burning a flag. But showing that you're grateful. You know, we live in a beautiful country where we have so many freedoms to the point where we abuse those freedoms. And we can legally abuse those freedoms and become, let's just say, buttholes about it. Hate the country, burn a flag, say the stuff against the war, and do all these other things, and blah, 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 blah. You get the point. You've heard them enough on the show. But we really don't tend to look at the other side of this. The people who volunteer for our military, volunteer for our military. And what a lot of Americans do not understand is that we have a volunteer military. I think the Marines just celebrated 240-something years, 246, something like that, birthday, which means that the Coast Guard and the Navy will be coming up soon if that hasn't already happened. But our armed forces are volunteer. I mean, well, what about the draft? Well, a draft is used when you need an emergency and when you need to call people in because you need to fill the ranks because the numbers may be very low. In our own country, we think of these things as if there's something that just happened. Side note, last night I was listening to a podcast and someone was talking about superheroes in the comic books and in movies, like Marvel movies. And they were saying, you know, the Black Panther's this and it's all that. And one person reminded the other one on the show, was saying, you know what, Black Panther was not the first, as people were saying, the first black superhero. He was not. There was Spawn in the movies. There was Blade. There were a whole bunch for many, many years long before Marvel made lots and lots of money and decided to do Black Panther. And that's what we get when we talk about the armed services and a few other things. I think I just distracted myself from getting back to the point. Which is, we don't really think of something that happened beforehand. I really did distract myself, didn't I? It was going to coincide with this. So we look at things as if it only exists in America and it just happened. It just happened because a whole brand new generation just showed up. They have no clue what went on before them because they only know what is pop culture, and everything that's popular is anti this and anti that. So they really don't get that our armed services are volunteer. And there is a signing up for a draft. I had to do it in my teens. And it's because, just in case there's an emergency, just because they need to fill up something when necessary. That doesn't mean you're going to be drafted. There is no real current war happening right now, no large-scale major current war, so you won't be drafted anytime soon. But there are people who are against the draft and afraid of the draft and don't want to do this and don't want to do that, and it's crazy. Again, we have a volunteer armed service. If and this is what I'm saying, you know, when Americans think about this, they think, oh, the horrible and everything we do is so this and so this. If you lived in Israel, there is no you getting in there voluntarily. You will be serving 2 years in the Israeli army. That's it. When you're done with your 2 years, I guess you can leave unless you want to stay in. But you understand the difference, right? You get to volunteer. You get to go and sign down a thing, and then once you're in there, you get paid. You don't have to. Americans do not have to serve in the military. But these other countries have a different idea on service. In Israel, again, you're serving 2 years. You could be a sniper, you could do that. It doesn't really matter. I think, you know, it was when, what's her name, did Wonder Woman, and everybody was beating her down, so many people in the media and everything else, when they found out that she was in the military, she had a gun and all this other, was she a sniper? I forgot what her position was. I'm like, leave the person alone. You know, where she comes from, she didn't have a choice whether she wanted to do it or not, but that was part of that country, serving that country, and protecting that country. Now in America, we have a lot of different protective services. When we're talking about a national scale for our entire country, that's our military. That's to protect us here and to protect us other places, and to have an armed service in case in which a conflict happens. It happened in biblical times. It happens all over. And you hear the whine is America this and America that and America. There have been armed conflicts. There have been fights and there have been wars since the beginning of time, all across the entire globe and all different scales, large scales and small scales. Our country isn't any different than any place else. So while there are some who are angry and saying these things and all the other stuff about this country and the military, they don't take the time to think that these young men and women, and for many years, our services kept women out of combat. And, you know, of course, women's liberals say, well, why can't they? Women are just a good, but you know what? Well, they did it out of a courtesy because, you know what? Remember the whole chivalry thing? And I'm with it. No, why do that? But, now we have both men and women in combat. So now here's the thing. These young men and women volunteer all walks of life to go into our military services. Some will never have to use their weapons because of the different jobs and titles that they have. Some might be called in to just be technical advisors, and they may work on computers, and they may be doing research and being analysts. Others may be in infantry, or others may be Marines, and someone hit the beach first, and someone out there shooting someone. Others turn into CIA operatives. It doesn't really matter. There are so many jobs within the military to fit everybody's personality or liking. And they volunteer for this many for many different reasons, including Airman Bland, my father. And these young men and women volunteer for things that may harm them. And they signed that contract to work for you and I and the federal government for those many years. And in those years, anything can happen. If they happen to be in a conflict, they may be injured. Some may die. They can die in a training accident. And they can get hurt. And then when they come home, what are they greeted with? The very Americans that they have been taking care of and watching over treat them as if they're lepers. The Vietnam veterans, I heard, were treated the worst of all. WW1 and 2, which is where we get Armistice Day and where we get Veterans Day from. Was it 1918 when this started? And then later on, the day was now encompassing all of the veterans, whether, I was about to say ancient, whether they were WW1 and 2 vets or vets from any other war or any other service was now included into what we now have as Veterans Day. So next time you see a vet and you want to thank them for their services, think about what you're saying, and perhaps there's a better way to thank them, because so many are treated so poorly. And I'll get into a little bit of that just a little bit later. I just wanted to open up with this. They volunteer. They volunteer to protect. They volunteer to get hurt. They volunteer to take care of that person to the left of them and to the right of them, and whoever is in front of them that they need to protect, and whoever is coming up from behind them has to watch their backs. As I said, we have a lot of protective services in this country. The National Guard and the Coast Guard protect our coastline and along, I was going to say the peripheral of our country. That's the Coast Guard. They get very little respect. But they police our waters. The National Guard is basically to take care of what's here at home. They're not really fashioned to go outside. They're the home team. But in times of war, they have been called to go out and do other things. So, they volunteer for all of these things. Where in some countries, you don't get to volunteer. Other countries have drafts as well. So let's get into Airman Bland. This week was my father's birthday, and I called him to say happy birthday, and I was like, well, how old are you? I thought he's like 83. He turned 85. His health been a little hanky over the past couple of months, and it's gotten a lot better. I will give you a backstory of this. You know what? Let me do this way. So we were talking because I had just got finished watching something about promoting more of trade schools and why trade schools are good and why there's a big hole in the trade jobs now, skilled labor. When I was growing up, and you looked in a one ad, right? When I was in my teens, you looked in the one ad, there was always this in the back, and it would say skilled labor and unskilled labor. Unskilled labor would have been things like McDonald's, something where you don't need a certificate or a degree or anything else for. Then as it got older, you started seeing things, you're talking about careers, and now you start getting to careers, you're talking about colleges. But as I was watching this little documentary, I remember what the person was saying, how we had a cultural shift in the country where it was, you know, we need to get the colleges filled up. So they start promoting college education. But the problem was, you get this college education or else you're going to be like this other person who is just going to be some low-level guy, you know, working as a mechanic or doing some other stuff, or as a person said, you know, turning a wrench. And I do remember as I was getting older, I started seeing that, yeah, there was this sort of difference in this sort of fighting among Americans about, you know, the people who were college educated thought they're everything. And so you got the people who were not college educated who were going to get these jobs. And then the way they looked at one another. And then we have to where we have right now, where those trade fields are about to be emptied out as people retire, and then they won't even be filled because there are a lot of people not going to those jobs. Because they've pushed so many years about getting a college education to the point now where we know that college education is astronomically the cost is astronomical. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with that. Basically, it costs too daggone much. And so young people are coming in and coming out with debt. Going in and coming out with debt. I used to tell my kids, you know, if you go in and fill out Pell and all these other things, you get these grants, don't spend up yet that your little refund check yet, because by the time you get to your fourth year, it's going to run out of money. So as the documentary goes on, it starts talking about these tradespeople. And the young lady who wanted to be a surgeon ended up being a welder. And I was looking at my daughter, who I know she kind of was like into the car because she was studying automotive for a little bit. And I was, you know, I'm testing out, see if she's got my dad's gene. And she kind of liked it. She's interested in it and a few other things. So I'm like, you know what? Give her, you know, homeschooling. Here's a broader education so you can tap into different things to see where your skill level is, where your desire is, and see where you are good at. Because there are certain things we are naturally good at. Which prompted me to ask my dad when we were talking to him on his birthday. Because my father is a tradesman. He's a mechanic. He was an Air Force mechanic, and he worked on planes and a few other things. And when he came out, he was a machinist. So, which basically is an engineer, a mechanical engineer. They create things out of nothing. I mean, one time I needed a cuff for my weights, and he came back with the little cuff, the thing that goes on the edge of your weights to keep your weights from sliding off and breaking your floor and your toe. Right. I had plastic ones that broke for my first set of weights when I was maybe 15, 16. He came back with solid metal ones that he created in the shop. He went on from that to around his 50. He got into working for New York City Transit. And he was a bus mechanic. What he told me was, when he first got the job, was that, you know what, he'd been working all these years. He didn't need to be a lead mechanic. So he just took the, you know, the mechanic helper, whatever the second mechanic, bus mechanic was, that's what he took. And he retired. Out of all those years, he did all those different jobs. You know, I think he was a strippogram. He worked for oh my God. Not Western House. Lord, it doesn't even exist anymore. Western Union, doing grams, you know, like delivering messages and stuff like that. I believe he told me he signed shoes at one point when he was a young guy. But, you know, he was mechanic. So after watching this documentary, I asked him a question. When did you know that you were mechanically inclined? He said, since he was little. He started taking apart toasters and other things, messing around with light switches. So he always knew he was mechanically inclined. And so the conversation just went on. You know, he talked about his health and a lot of other stuff. And then it came and I had to keep asking questions. So I asked him, why didn't you go to college? You didn't want to go? He said, in those days, you know, who could even afford it? He said, we didn't have money. And if you could, I mean, how much could you even afford college? He grew up in Harlem. And he entered into the Air Force in between the Korean War and the Vietnam War. He just narrowly missed both. Getting in just after the Korean, getting out just before Vietnam took off. And, you know, I kind of knew this, but then I found some new information as we were talking. So he's like, you know, who could afford it? He said, in those days, you know, all the cheese and stuff that people were getting today, that free stuff, he said, they were getting it then. Now, this was just after World War II, right, because he was born in 30. So right after WW2. And it was a time and they weren't rich. He was saying, you know, it was, you know, if you don't eat right, you can't think right. And he says that's probably the reason why he got into health food and being healthy. Because of being, you know, growing up that way, being poor and being in poor shape and having a poor diet. And so, you know, that kind of propelled him into getting into a lot more healthy eating and taking care of his body. Now that we have your attention for the next few seconds, we'd love to invite you to come and follow us and share our adventures over at YouTube at the White Bear and TK Experience, where you get to experience the things that we're doing out there on the road, whether it's hiking or taking road trips. So go to YouTube, the White Bear and TK Experience. And as usual, if you have any questions about the podcast, you want to talk to us, maybe you want to have us on your show, maybe you'd like to come and have a discussion with us, you can always reach us at whitebeardandtk@gmail.com. That's whitebeardandtk@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll talk to you soon. And as long as I've known him, he has always been into health foods and or healthy eating, should I say, and exercising and going to the gym. He's still doing it at 85. Obviously, it's moderate as he's getting older. And his health issues this year kept him from getting to the gym and stopping to do things and slowing down his juice. I remember he brought me a juicer way, 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 way back. This is before all the people were doing stuff right now. Seriously. The whole kale juice and, ooh, we got to have the kale. Man, you know, I look at this. Let me tell you something. Black folks have been eating kale their entire life. I'm going to digress for a second. They've been eating kale all their entire lives. It is funny because when I was getting older, in my late teens, maybe in my 20s, right? Closer to my 30s, late 20s. And it was this whole big talk in America, right? Because in this country, we always compare things from black, everything is to white people. As they were eating all this healthy food and eating more salad and everything else, it's like, I'm not eating like those white people because they do so and so and so and so. Well, look at the health industry now. You've got a lot more black Americans promoting a whole lot more healthy eating that seems to look just like all the people that a lot of them was mocking back in the 80s. You know, those white folks. Where I said, it has nothing to do with the people. It has to do with the food. Now, culturally speaking, we all have our cultural, you know, stance when it comes to food, what I am not going to eat. You know, I'm not going to put turkey, ground turkey in my so-and-so because it's always been made this way and it's always been unhealthy. You could make it a little healthy. It's all about the spices and stuff. But I digress. So my father was already into this for years. So I knew about juicing and the whole smoothie thing, which is now the new crave, long before it showed up to be the latest thing to do. My brother brought me a juicer. I think my kids, my son, my firstborn, was very young when he brought my first juicer, which was by Mr. Juicer or something like that, because he had one. But he had a Vitamix or whatever, the veggie mix, I think it is, a very well-known one, more of like an industrial type of thing. And that's what he used to make all of his juices, different kind of juices for cleansing, for strength, for all this other stuff. And then he would go to the gym. Now, I don't believe my father used protein powders like people are doing today. So I kind of use that in a smoothie. Well, I actually just brought a protein powder. It was made out of, the Naked Pea. They do rye. Whey. I said, I'll try whey the next time. I've never used protein powder, so this is my first time. I don't like the grainy feel to it. And I don't like smoothies. Now, my daughter likes the smoothie. I'm a juice person. I would rather have the juice, a vegetable juice, you know, throw stuff in it, because I like it to be very thin so I can just drink it and go about my business. I don't even like shakes at a store. So a smoothie, I really don't like. So when we're making it, I put a little extra water in it. I tell my daughter to put a little extra more water in it for me so that I can drink it. I don't like the thickness of it. She likes the smoothie. I like the juice. So we don't really have a juicer. I have like a bullet now. I only got that because my wife got into smoothies a few years before she died. And we had a bullet in that walk with one of the kids who left out the house. So I brought another one. And so that's what we've been using for our smoothies. So my father's always been into health and working out. So he was really happy when I got my first set of weights. And then, you know, was telling me about juicing, which I didn't really care for back in those days because I was young and dumb. You know, when you're in your 20s, how stupid you are. Yeah, then you get in your 30s, you realize how stupid you were in your 20s. And then you hit your 30s, it's like, yeah. I'm watching my older kids do it now. So he was always into that. And I was more of a carrot juice person. So I started juicing with carrots. And then I added vegetables. And then if I had a leftover salad, I would throw that in there. And then I was doing a cucumber thing. So, and then after a while, we got away from juicing when I first got married. And then we got another juicer at some other point. We used that for a little bit. And then it just faded away, just collected dust after a while. And now getting more into health in my late 40s, you know, bounced around off and on until, you know, a few years ago. And as my body is getting, I can start to feel all the pains from what I did to it in my 20s, getting a little bit more, trying to be a little bit more health conscious now. And so I can look at this man, and he's been doing this all of his life, long before the new craze. So he said this is the reason for it, because he grew up sort of poor. Didn't have enough, had very little, and that's when he started thinking, you know what, when you can eat well, you could think better and make better choices. So I asked him about college, and that's what he said about college. It was a little expensive, and in those days, who could afford it? You know, some kid from Harlem. So then I asked the question, well, why the Air Force? His answer was, well, I had no other choice. Had no other options of any other thing that he wanted to do at that time. And as he was thinking of these options, he had my aunt, her husband, joined the Air Force. And so he was like, huh, okay. So he joined him. He went in. I have another uncle that went into the Air Force at the same time. So all of them were in the Air Force. And they served various times. I had one uncle, the first one he's talking about, he was in there. He was a career guy. The other one wasn't. He came out and ended up working for the MTA. My father came out and just was a mechanic. He wanted to be a mechanic. He went to, I forgot the name of the school that he went to here in New York for mechanics. I don't think it was automotive high school. I forgot what it was. Aviation, I think he went to. And so he studied this his entire life. And I looked at the things he's done. I've analyzed all the stuff and I was like, you could have gone to college and became a mechanical engineer, because he really was a mechanical engineer. But we get to the point where, how can you afford this college? I was like, oh my gosh. Because the question was, when did you know you were mechanically inclined? It's been since he was young. And he's basically, he just doesn't have the degree, a mechanical engineer. So he goes into the Air Force as a mechanic. He comes out as a mechanic. He does odd jobs and then still ends up his career as a mechanic. And so I asked him about the Air Force. And so he said, because I was talking about traveling and we just came back from New Mexico. He said, I was really good to see the country. And I said, yeah, We were driving through Texas, and it took us like 17 hours to get through. And that's because we were driving 100 miles an hour. He said, Texas is big. I'm like, you're in Texas? I thought he was in Biloxi. I didn't know he was in Texas at one point. But he was in Texas for training. He said, yeah, you get on the bus and it take you hours to get from one spot to the next. And, you know, so we were just talking about traveling, about being able to see things. And so I asked him a little bit more about the Air Force. Over the years we've talked. And he said he went in at 17. I was like, what? So yeah, he went in at 17. He had to get signed in because you couldn't get in. He was too young to get into the Air Force. I was like, wow, well, this is part of a story I didn't know. And he only weighed 117. That's right. A whopping 117 pounds soaking wet. And while I'm sitting here talking, telling this to my daughter, TK, we started laughing. I was like, Grandpa was Steve Rogers. He was Steve Rogers. The only difference is Steve came from Brooklyn and my father came from Harlem. He was Steve Rogers. So he goes in at only 117 pounds, 17 years old. Someone had to sign off for him to get in there. He had come from a background where they didn't really have a whole bunch of food to eat. He was limited on the choices that he could do at that particular time and went into there. Already had a mechanics background. And came out with a head full of knowledge and a lot of things that you could still see him doing today. His pants are still creased like he's a like he is still in the military. And some of you will know what I'm talking about because you have older relatives who were in the military many, many years ago who are still just like that, still walk the same, still crease their hats and so on. So when they go on, you know, when they're out, and you'll see some of the younger guys today. They're not like that. Many of them got beards now and they just sitting back. It's really crazy to watch the different generations of veterans and military guys, but and women. But I don't know personally anyone, any female, any women who have been in, who's been in service. Personally, I don't know any personally. I heard of some people, but yeah. So, I was like, wow, like, how did you pull that off? And so he went in there and that's when he learned about nutrition and eating better and feeling better and thinking better. And when he came out, that's one of those things that came with him. Now, he did have a stint with alcoholism for a large part of his life before he was saved, as he said, became a Christian. Then he changed. He moved from being a Catholic to becoming a Pentecostal. I think he was raised Catholic. And so and he went through a lot of different life changes to get to where he is. And so I said, wow, you missed both wars. He said, yeah. And he was lucky. He said, you know, a lot of people that went and they were messed up in their heads when they came out. And we talked for a little bit more. Now here's a backstory. I grew up with a kid with a single parent, and that was my mother in the house. My dad didn't live with us. I don't know if he ever lived with us. My sister's 4 years older than me. I mean, maybe he lived with us when, you know, she was a kid or something. I don't know. My dad never lived with us. He's from Westchester. His family moved out of Harlem and moved up to Westchester. So I saw him on the weekends. He was a weekend warrior, and there were some weekends when he didn't come, and then there were when he did show up, you know, he was either drinking or we went to a bar, and that's how I got into video games. I've said this before on this podcast. It was my dad who introduced me to video games. He would sit at the bar and drink with some of his buddies, and me and my sister, or just me sometimes, and he would give me a couple of quarters and give me one of them glasses that had ice in it. You know a little stir that they put in your drink? Right. I had like some ice up in there with a Coke soda and a straw. And I'd go and play video games. A little skeet ball, a little this little bowling thing where you take this little puck and you slide across the top and then they would just flip up. And it would pinball. He would take us to other places too. There was an amusement park, I think, called Palisades, which is apparently right over in Jersey. And I used to get into like car racing games and just play that simulated man. And that one was, there was no computer screen. There was just like this big plastic car. And then the road would just roll over on the screen and you turn the wheel and the plastic car would go side to side on the screen that you're playing in. So I got into video games, introduced to it because of my dad. So I got that from him. And so sometimes we'd go and I would see the lady who later on became his wife, his girlfriend at the time. I didn't know my parents weren't divorced. I didn't even know they were married until, I got one parent who was angry because of whatever was going on. And now it's like, oh, divorce? Oh, I never even heard a word. I didn't know they was married. It really wasn't. I'll get to that in a second. So he lived over there. Sometimes he came, sometimes he was late, sometimes he said he was going to show up and he didn't show up. And there's other times he would come, and sometimes he was drunk and sometimes he wasn't. Sometimes we'd go to his bar and drink. We'd go back to his house and sit there and watch TV, and then he'd take me back home. And then he bowled, so he was in the league of bowling. He tried to get me to learn how to bowl, but I was younger. I really wasn't into it, and I wasn't into that thing. I mean, had our relationship been different and he'd been more in it, then that would have helped. But what he didn't do was he failed to teach me mechanical skills. I probably would have loved that because he always drove these cars that I really liked. He had a Thunderbird at one time, a Grand Prix, always muscle cars. And I loved it, the roar of that engine. And he was like, "Hey, listen to this. Can you hear this?" And he hit the and get, because he was a speed demon too, by the way. And so we would fly down the road and you hear all that other stuff. So I really love the sound of muscle cars, and I wish he had taught me and took me under the hood, but that wasn't our relationship. And so we really didn't connect. And when I got into my late teens, that was just about it. He didn't really come around, and I just started to go different places. Hanging out with my friends, escape from my house, return when I could or when I had to, but I just always wanted to just be away. And that's kind of what I did until I had my children, and I pretty much stayed put and didn't do much. So we didn't reconnect until I was in my 30s. And then came that fateful day. He was at church. And we were talking, and I'd asked him, why did he leave and why didn't he ever come back? He ordered a beer for me, but I didn't drink. At that time, I had just become a Christian, and I was like, I don't drink, I don't do this. And he broke down. And started telling me some stuff. And it was at the moment I just totally forgave him. And then our relationship took off from there. He was more in his grandchildren's life than he was in my life. He would come around and we would talk on the phone once a week or twice a week if he called me for some particular reason to tell me something. And then that's how we moved on. And then when I got married, he come around and then he and my wife hit it off really well. And he would call and talk to her, talk to the kids, see how they were, or talk or ask about the kids. And then, and that was it for a while. That's how our relationship began to cultivate, became after we were both grown men. So I didn't have him growing up. And when I was younger in the 70s, I didn't really know anybody else that had an intact house. I can only go by today's standards and say an intact house. No one thought about that when we were kids. You just thought, well, your dad didn't live with you. Or your dad was in the house. That was it. If you had one. I didn't know too many kids whose fathers took them fishing or stuff. That was always one thing I wanted to do. I wanted to know how to fish. So I saw that on TV. I saw families when the father would come in, take the kids camping and fishing and teach them how to fix cars and play ball with them, whether they were boy or girl, teach them how to ride a bike and all these other things. I didn't have that, and neither did a lot of my friends. So it was a common thing. Didn't think about it. I didn't feel the loss of anything because I didn't know this thing to know that it was a loss. I guess I felt it when I got older, and when you learn about the absence of dads in boys' lives when they're growing up in those years. So it's you start to notice the difference. So I didn't notice it. Now, most of my cousins all had intact homes where their fathers are all with them. We were the only one that I know of that didn't have that. So I didn't get to come to know this guy until we were both adults. And so, you know, we talk every once in a while. And so over the past few years, I've just been trying to get more information, more of what his life was like in the Air Force, and more of all these other things that I didn't get a chance to grow up and know and was never told. So that's the backdrop of all of Airman Bland and why we're getting all these other things. So he was 17, 117 pounds, kind of poor, didn't really have a lot of options, although he was trying to think of things but couldn't figure out what to do, was a mechanic, went in as a mechanic and came out as a mechanic, missed both wars, and said something very important that I want to end this podcast with. A lot of people came back and was messed up. So see, America, this is the part that bugs me. When you hear people trashing the military and saying some other stuff and all these other things, you get to have that freedom to say that. But it becomes an abuse. We've had a culture now where we talk about hurt feelings and don't say things. And, you know, you got people like YouTube and everybody else trying to get rid of the dislikes and, you know, so that people's feelings won't get hurt and all of that. But they don't care a rat's butt about hurting the people who served this country in military service. And that's shameful. Because you chose not to go. They chose to go for various reasons. Some do it for patriotic reasons where they want to go and they want to serve this country. Some people go on it because it was a family thing. My dad and his whole generation, all my uncles at his age, they were all airmen. Now the older set, like my grandfathers and the rest of them, they were all Army, and they were in the Army when it was segregated. My dad's side, he tells me about how his stepdad, his father, the guy who raised him, was on the Red Ball Express. And if you don't know what that is, go check it out. The Red Ball Express, when they were going through Europe, right? As a supply chain, let me just put it like that. The logistics, my brain is like, it's gone right now. So there was supply chain. So I had someone in the family who was on the Red Ball Express. On the other end, there are others who marched through Germany battling Hitler and them. So there's a lot of people from my family that served this country, even at a time when the country did not respect them because of their culture and the complexion of their skin. We're at a time where they have been thought of as being less than and not smart as. But they still did it. They were raised to do these things. We loved the country. We served the country in many different ways. And someone who came out and they went to, city jobs and stuff. But you get what I'm going at? Now we're at a point where there are so many options and people could do so many things and they've got all this stuff to talk about and they don't know a thing. And their opinions about those who served this country in the military. So there are those who go in for patriotic reasons. It's a family thing. So-and-so was a Marine. I'm going to be a Marine. And they just go on through. So-and-so was in the Navy and this and that and the other. I was going to go to the Army at one point after watching the movie First Blood because I wanted to be a Ranger. A Green Beret and all the other good stuff. And later on, I was going to do it again. And then that was when I came close and I said, nah, you know what? I got enough of somebody screaming and yelling at me every day. I don't know if I can take it. Because my attitude is, you say another word to me and I'll knock somebody out. So I never did. It's not a real point of me, of a regret for me. But I think if it older now, it's like, man, if I had gone, had I known, I would have went in and I probably would have been in the Navy or the Air Force like my father. The Navy simply because I love the water. I can't swim worth a darn, but I love the water and I would love to have traveled on the sea. So those were the two I would have went into. I knew I was never going to be a Marine, that I didn't have that in me. Marines are because of their tough training, and you, if you're listening and you know someone's a Marine, because of their tough training, they come out and can't really relax. So let me get to, like I was saying, to the point of this, how I'm going to end this, close this out. So they go in for many different reasons. My father needed some direction a bit. And he got in there and learned that, wow, food help you think better. He comes out with some other stuff. People go in because they want to go to college and they don't have the money and they know they can go in and they can do this. And they go and they take it for college. Others go in because they're escaping a very bad life that can land them into jail. From all walks of life, they volunteer to serve this country. And they were treated like trash afterwards, except for those who have a love and respect because they knew someone in their family or they know somebody else who will see a veteran and say, thank you for your service. Others thank them by just paying for their meals. You can even thank them by saying, you know, I'm glad that you came home. Because some people feel very guilty of returning home whole, two arms, two legs, and mentally good, where some of their buddies did not. Mentally jacked up, lost an eye, lost a limb, lost two legs, or lost their lives. And they come home guilty. Some come home feeling guilty about all the things that they had to do during their tour of duty and maybe a conflict where they had to kill somebody, where they have never killed a thing in their lives. Not everybody come from a country where they're out there killing animals to make meat for the rest of the winter, so they don't even got to go to the store and pay for that. Not everybody's a hunter and a fisher, fisherman. Or Anglican, you guys call yourself? Anglican, whatever it is. So not everybody have those skills. Some people come from urban settings. Some people come from urban settings where you've heard gunshots, but you've never pulled a trigger. And they come back guilty because they came back and some didn't. They came back whole and some didn't come back whole. And some of those who come back that are not whole can't get the medical care that they need, don't get the mental care that they need, don't get the supportive care that they need. Not from the government sometimes, not from their family members, and not from the world around them. Having lived the life that I have led, I spent more times out in the street watching people get shot in front of me, seeing bullets whiz by my face as one person is shooting another person and going through some other stuff. I have seen people strung out on drugs and fall out. I've walked past bodies that were not alive. And anyone who has not gone through that cannot possibly understand the psychological trauma that a person can grow up with that type of life. So you can't possibly understand psychologically what they're going through in conflict. When you get into the military, you're going to be broken down to be built up to be this machine to go out and get the job done. No one's worried about your feelings at the moment because we need to get you to be a fighting machine. Now, there may need to be, and I'm quite sure there's a lot of changes right now within the military structure. There needs to be, because it's the same thing with guys, with people coming out of prison. There needs to be an exit strategy. Preparing them for when they're about to come home. Preparing them for how to handle things when they get back. As well as helping the families. Now, I'm sure I don't know anybody who's a new vet right now, so I don't know. I'm not going to say this. But for years, there haven't really been that support, which is what I'm saying. And today, that support is needed. There's so many that come back so harmed and hurt, and they could have two legs and two arms. And these vets are killing themselves. And that's a shame. In biblical times, let's talk biblically for a second. When the soldiers of Israel went to fight, let's go with David for a little bit. When they went to fight, at the end of their time of service, they were given something on their exit. There are a few of, you know, David's high guys that, you know, they were given this parcel of land over here and all these things that he took care of his people. In modern day, our soldiers work for the federal government. And like any other government employee, our vets need to be taken care of. Psychologically, emotionally, and every other way they need their support. Because it's a shame that they have served us, they have served the government, and not received the proper care and stuff that they need. There shouldn't be so many of them committing suicide right now. So it's not just thank you for your service, but how about we show them that we are thankful for all that they have lost and they have given up and they volunteered to do without even knowing all of the stuff that they're going to go through. My father didn't say that he was lucky. He didn't say he was blessed that he missed the stuff. He just said he was in between the two wars and he saw people that was messed up. Our vets, whether they were in WW1 and 2 or any other conflict, deserve some respect and some care because of all that they have sacrificed. And they did it willingly, only to be treated like lepers, only to have a high suicide rate. I know that half of us, if not all of us, cannot understand what it is to serve in the military. But we can understand what it means to have a support and have a lack of. I don't know what it's like to grow up and have a dad in the house. Mine wasn't there. He was in my life partially, and I know him more now as an adult male. The impact of both on my life are felt. I just lost my train of thought what I meant by that. What how was I going to bridge the two together? So anyway, let's end with this. Don't just say thank you for your service, but how about we be really, really grateful and thankful for that vet service. Whether you know that person personally in your life, whether you have somebody in the military right now, or if you know the guy down the block, or that lady across the street, or that mechanic over here, or if she's, you know, working over here serving you some burgers. Be grateful. Thank them for all that they did. The same way you like to be thanked when you serve somebody. Here's a glass of water. Thank you. Why not extend our kindness and our courteousness? Our kindness and our courteousness? Yeah, I guess that's the right word. To those who serve in the military. Not to trample on the flag that you understand is going to get them upset. Not to trample on what they did and say, you were killing this and you were killing that in the war, because you've never been there. You only get the freedom to sit around and poke your finger at something you have no clue about. But you get real upset. About something so trivial. So today, in honor of my dad and all the rest of you out there who have done this job, thank you. I'm so glad that you made it home. And for those who may find this podcast, hang in there. Don't lose hope. As long as you're living, you can get that help. You can get that help. Folks, let's not just thank them, but let's pray for some of these vets. Because like I said, there are too many of them losing their lives to suicide. That's it for today. You have a great rest of your day. See you soon.